So I just invite everybody to just relax, close your eyes. I'm not doing anything that interesting. This is for your ears. So let your ears absorb this. And I will play here for a few minutes, and then we'll hear Reverend Dr. Lori.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, now we have the delight to hear Reverend Dr. Lori Bolster speak to us today. Take it away, Lori.
Good morning. I have two dogs here that both want to be in my lap. That's not going to happen. This morning we are talking about the chapter from the Anatomy of Healing Prayer, and it is the chapter called Dynamics and Analysis of Treatment. It's from Ernest Holmes's talks that people have collected and written up over time. I believe this one is one where he was together with some people. They just said, please talk to us, and he did. And so they transcribed it later. We're talking about the analysis and dynamics of treatment. So the focus is treatment. And as he opens his chapter, he's talking about that first there needs to be a recognition of this divine presence. First, there's the divine universal, which carries the intelligence and the creativity, the creation. And then there's the divine presence. Basically, we have an infinite creative force that's acting as law. And I think everybody here is familiar with that use of the word law. I think everybody is. So it's acting as law. And we have an infinite presence acting as individuals. So we're all within this amazing creative force. And then we get to participate in it. And so... But we have, individuals have their own perception of life, how life goes, how their life is going, what's real, what's going on. We have experience of ecstatic joy to just agonizing misery, different experiences, different awarenesses, different perceptions, different beliefs, different ways of thinking. He reminds us that the thought that we are having, or the opinions or perceptions, are not who we are. It's a thought process. And sometimes, and he talks about that people can have neurotic thoughts. And those neurotic thoughts and thoughts of just woo, woo, woo can take their life off into activities or ways of being that aren't real helpful. Their fine mind is telling them things that, art, for one thing, don't match up with the magnificence of this creative reality, the truth that is the divine presence, the divine intelligence, the divine creator, that we can have thoughts that are totally opposite from the reality of that divinity, of that truth. And that, I thought it was interesting because he says that Mary Baker Eddy, who created Christian Science, said that kind of thinking is simply an error making a claim. So as we do our own work, our own spiritual mind treatment, we make affirmative statements, affirmative claims, but that if we let this other stuff go on in our head that we're not really paying attention to or having control of, we're just getting sucked into this neurotic kinds of things, that's an error making a claim. I just thought that was very interesting. That, yeah, we got to come back here. And then he starts talking, Holmes starts talking about that we suffer because we don't know any better. And we here certainly do know better. But sometimes we can slip. Sometimes we don't realize what we're doing. And I just thought it's interesting because usually I don't hear about suffering here. That sounds like he's been reading Buddhism, where they talk about that. Yeah, life is just dukkha. It's just the condition of life. It happens. We don't always get what we want. People can end up in misery and suffering. But the point being that you don't have to stay there. People get attached to things, and getting attached to things and attached to ways of being, attached to people and notions and ways of thinking, that can get you dragged into the suffering, but there are ways out of that. And of course, we have way out of that as well. And he gets to talking about that we get an inertia of thought. We get into habits of ignorance, of just, we just don't know any better. And it reminds me of that physics concept of a body at rest stays at rest. Well, we can get this inertia of thought where we're just sunk in this thought. And it's like, well, we can't see life being any different. That's just the way it is. And we have to just accept it. We have to, you know, suck it up and just deal. And sometimes that kind of habit of thinking, that sort of inertia of thought, and then we start explaining it. Well, here's why this is the way life is. This is why I'm living the way. This is why. And all these explanations, that just digs us in deeper. The stories we tell each other, ourselves, well, something bad happens, and then I'm sure we've all heard these stories about that we rehearse what happened and how we should have done it better. And I just have this picture of, I'm sorry, it's old school. It just works better than going in a closet with a cell phone. Go in a phone booth and call yourself and tell yourself the same story over and over and over again. I just get the biggest kick out of that image. And I try to make it modern. Well, I take my cell phone into a closet and call myself and tell, no, it doesn't work. A telephone where you get a hold of it and it's got a thing here and a thing here and you talk in it and you dial it and you tell you the same. It's just as silly as thing. It's as silly as what we're doing when we do that. I mean, the concept of using a telephone that way anymore, that's just sort of okay. But anyway, so the explanations, the rehearsals, the redoing, we just dig ourselves farther and farther. It's an inertia of thought where it's just sinking farther and farther into it. And you were running around in our own brain pan, but there's no friction, so that can go on forever. Ooh, there you are. Do you want to live there? And we can do this whether or not we're being conscious of it or aware of it. We can do it totally unaware, totally unconscious of it. And we're just going along. It's a habit. It's a way of being. And we can just do this regardless of knowing the truth of our lives and of this creative force and this divine presence that we are being. But we can still manage to feel very insecure and very unloved and unwanted. But none of that is possible in reality. It's just not. And so then he gets to talking about concepts of what's doing what. No, we get into that kind of thinking and it's like, I don't remember if it was Voltaire or Candide or whoever it was that says, I think, therefore I am. And so we think our way into our own existence because we think we exist, but I'm thinking that's backwards. I think it's that I am, therefore I think, and therefore I am, and therefore I think, and it's that chicken and egg thing that you can get going. And that's just like, what? Where's the beginning? Well, the beginning is that there is no beginning because there's no beginning because it just all is. And that's the part, that little two little word, IS, it just is. It all just is. It's the suchness, it's the isness, it's just is. And now we're getting into divine principle, which responds to us via the law. And so what are we doing? What are we creating? And that we relate to presence, our own presence and the presence of all of this, using the law. And then we get, and we know this is happening because then we get the demonstration. And our work, here's my balancing act is falling down. And our outcomes are a demonstration of our intentions. And that's a use of a law. That's I have an intention, and then I do the clarity about it, and it is real. And anything that exists came out of an idea. All inventions come out of ideas. Somebody is using their fine mind. Somebody is flowing this presence, this intelligence that's available to us. And the proof of this is in the fact that things happen. And he refers to Jesus. That Jesus says, stand up and walk. Well, if nothing happened, then those are just words. They didn't have the power, the force of the presence in them. They're just words. There's no authority. There's no credibility to it. But the fact that something happens, there's your demonstration that this divine intelligence is at work through the law, through the presence, the universal presence that is us showing up individually. And so we've got words and thoughts and intentions, but, and you know, they can create anything. And if we're using them without paying attention and without having some substance to them, then they're all just words. And that's just like, okay, we can do words from here to there back again. But the fact is that reality is reality. And if we bring that into our words and our thoughts and our intentions, that substance, all of a sudden, there is tremendous freedom. In knowing that, in knowing that if we combine just the words with the feeling, the energy, the language of creation, the power that is the truth of the reality of this creative force, now we're cooking with gas. Now we can have an absolute affirmation. And here it is. That's a complete embodiment of the thought, where we know the truth of it. Now we're dealing with just not words of, I know the truth about. No, now we've got that isness. Now we've got it. Now we're right in it with the power and the energy and the truth of the reality of being within this divine presence and creative process and creative force. We are living within it, whether or not we know it or like it or do anything with it. It's still there. It's still true. And that we know it, but do we always know it? Do we always just embody the truth of that affirmative, absolute affirmation of who and what we're all about? And then you have, when doing an affirmative prayer or spiritual mind treatment, then you have that power that's being conveyed out loud by words. That's a whole different thing than just words. Got something here, a note. Where did it? Uh-oh, what did my page I have it on? My sticky came off. Now we're talking about, we're getting into mysticism. So the intellect, talking about a language of feeling, which while it does not deny the intellectual conviction, because you can have an intellectual conviction, sort of sweeps it up, adds warmth and color and feeling to it. And that's the difference between technique and temperament. The intellect may furnish a perfect technique. We have science that will teach that. And sometimes you can get a result just using technique. But we have to have a technique that we can actually teach to people. And that's what religious science is trying to do when it teaches that how to do spiritual mind treatment. But it can teach a technique. Here's the steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And some have 7 or 10 steps. We tend to use 5. But if you just have the technique, then you're not going anywhere. You need to understand that while we see things as solid facts, like table, window, sky, computer, my own self, it's actually a liquid universe. And the divine creator, the creative force, is working with this liquid universe that's governed by flowing laws that are intelligent. And so that's where we want to be playing. We want to be playing within the fact that we are part of this liquid universe with flowing laws that are intelligent, that we make use of. And that's where you start getting into mysticism, and intuition. Things that you can't just explain. Things that are beyond, here's the technique, but beyond that into the just accepting that that's the way it is. And there's always controversy when you talk about people just, well, you just accept something based on fate. But when you're talking about something that's just is, then, and if we are willing to say, I know it just is, I know this because I have practiced this. I have an intention. I have a powerful affirmation. I'm right there. I know the truth of it. And then something happens. Then there's a demonstration of it. Working with business, the truth of just energy, energy flows, and working within aspects that we can't see, that are not just tangible facts of reality. So there's that something else that has to be present beyond just what you're thinking, or here's what I want to do, here's the words I want to say. You have to have a principle and be working within it and know how it works, and that you can then teach other people. That's what Ernest Holmes has been doing for 100 years, is teaching other people how to use a technique which gets you across the line from solid facts and, well, here's my little art reality, here's my life, here's the way things work, into, oh, here's reality, the principle of here's how things work. If you can't get across there, then you are in that inertia and you're just spinning in your brain pan. And so we get to the acceptance. And he uses a metaphor that is like that you don't know where the songbird song is. What's that? What is the song? If you dissect the bird, you still don't find the song. It just exists. It is a self-existing thing. It's just truth. And so the creation has a creator, and the creator sings a song, and you just know it. You can hear it. You just know it. And you accept that the creator has a song, and we accept that, and we participate in that because we can. How are we doing that? Now, what's going on? What's happening? When Jesus says words and something happens, we do a treatment and something happens. What? How is that happening? You can't be based on externalities. If you're depending on externalities for your truth, then if you're bounded by that, you're not free. You're free when you know, oh, there's that song, and I can play with that. We have to get to that. We have to get to this point. And here, more words. They carry meaning. So I ask myself, what goes here? And decided I better start a direction these things can't follow, because as long as they follow, they'll have a story to tell. Now we're in the story in the phone booth. And we might look at it until we believe it. We have to get to a point of non-dualism, non-combativeness, where there's nothing even to be saved or rectified or regulated. And for the first time, we will arrive at the only place that can do this. Because in this non-resistive silence is the real affirmation and real action. All things are possible to those who can perfectly practice in action. All action will flow out of that. All voices come out of stillness or silence. And so that's what we're going to talk about during the experiential part of this morning. So, thank you.